Exodus chapter 21. Exodus 21. We're looking at the civil law of Israel. As you'll recall, we're in the law section of the book of Exodus. And I hope to finish out the civil law section this morning because it reads kind of like the Kansas City traffic code. You know, I mean, it's not terribly exciting to read through, but I want to point out a few things about it and leave it to you to read it in detail because there are things to be learned from it. And I'll give you the overview so that you can go into the details and study these things. But now we're talking about bodily injury and property rights. And remember, the law breaks down into three sections. We're on the section called the judgments. First, we had the commandments, remember? That is Israel's moral life. We talked about the Ten Commandments, the moral laws of Israel. That was in Exodus chapter 19 and 20. Chapter 19 was the preamble. Chapter 20 gave the Ten Commandments. Now we're looking at the judgments. And the judgments cover Israel's civil law. That would be what we would call civil law cases. So that's in chapters 21 through 23. Again, these don't apply to us directly. We can learn from them, but we're not governed by them. Some of our laws are based on these laws in our culture. Others aren't. And the last part will be the whole rest of the book of Exodus, and that's the ordinances. That covers the tabernacle, the ceremonies, the religious life of nation Israel. So we'll get to that when we get to chapter 25. So the judgments 21 to 23 and the ordinances go from Exodus 25 clear through Leviticus. Now you may notice chapter 24 is missing there. It's a transition. What chapter 24 does is it shows how Israel ratified this covenant with God. Israel said, okay, I'm going to do everything you said. Ha. But they did. They ratified it. It was officially ratified. That established the Mosaic covenant. And we'll look at the differences between that and the Abrahamic covenant. And we'll see why you can't put those two together. They're separate and what separates them. So we're on the civil law. Now we left off last time in chapter 21, verse 18, talking about judgments on bodily injuries. Now we just had last week five case laws, and this is case law stuff, remember, that we're looking at. Would be what we would call case law. It's based on precedent. Something that's happening. And we had five case laws that were punished by death, the death penalty laws last time. Now, the following five that we're going to look at now, they deal with assault, bodily injury. They're not death penalty crimes. In the case of a dispute, for example, when it comes to blows, these two guys are arguing over something. They come to blows and one guy gets hurt. Now what happens? Well, that's verses 18 and 19. It says if a man have a quarrel and one strikes the other with a stone or with his fist and he does not die. Now remember, if he'd kill him, that would be the death penalty, but he doesn't die now, then he has to remain in bed. If he gets up and walks around outside on his staff, then he who struck him shall go unpunished. He shall only pay for his loss of time and shall take care of him until he is completely healed. So their law was that on assault, if you assaulted someone and he was hurt, then you had to pay for his medical expenses and you had to take care of him during his recovery. That was your responsibility. Which makes more sense? if you commit an assault, to put you in prison and leave the victim to depend on his insurance company or something, or to make the person who assaulted him take care of his medical expenses. And we'll see, this goes to the point of, if they can't afford it, they have to sell themselves into slavery. And we'll see that in a minute. But you have a responsibility to compensate the victim. And it's going to be very apparent in the laws of Israel that their laws were designed around the rights of the victim. Not the rights of the criminal, but the rights of the victim. And the victims are the ones who get the benefit of the law. So we could learn from that, because we have that all mixed up. We operate the other way around. Everything is concerned with the rights of the criminal in our society. And the victims go pretty much unnoticed. I know there are advocacy groups now that help victims, but not like Israel. Then we go on to striking a slave, and that's in verse 20 and 21, where it says, if a man strikes his male or female slave with a rod and he dies at his hand, he shall be punished. If, however, he survives a day or two, no vengeance shall be taken, for he is his property. Now, what does that mean? What it means basically is the assumption is this, that if the slave dies immediately, then that master was trying to kill him. He had that in his mind. Now, the rod was not considered a lethal weapon. It wouldn't be like shooting the slave. They considered the rod a form of punishment or an incentive, we might call it, for the slave to get off his, you know, and go to work. So they had the right to dispense corporal punishment on slaves. They did not have the right to kill their slaves. If they intentionally killed a slave, then he is held accountable. If the slave survives for a day or two and then dies, then the owner is given the benefit of the doubt. It's just saying, well, he didn't really mean to kill him. Because if he did, he would be dead already. And this was just an accident. He hit him too hard. So he's given the benefit of the doubt. Look over at verse 26 and 27, and we have to balance this. 26 says, if a man strikes the eye of his male or female slave and destroys it, he shall let him go free on account of his eye. And verse 27, if he knocks out a tooth of his male or female slave, he shall let him go free on account of his tooth. So see, the laws are there not to put the slave completely at the mercy of his master. The laws are there to control how much power the master has over his slaves. So the law says, if you go too far, if you hurt this guy, you have to let him go. It's not to put the slave at the master's mercy. The law is not designed to protect the master. It's designed to protect the slave. Now, the third case we have involves men who are fighting. One of them strikes a pregnant woman. Verse 22, if men struggle with each other and strike a woman with child so that she gives birth immediately, yet there is no injury, he shall surely be fined, as the woman's husband may demand on him, and he shall pay as the judges decide. So if there are two guys fighting, and say one of the wives tries to get in the middle of the fight, and she gets hit and goes into labor immediately, then there are two courses of action that were available. First, if the blow causes the woman to go into labor immediately, so it's accidental. If nobody's hurt, then there's still compensation. It says if the mother and the child survive, there's still compensation to be paid. If there is a serious injury, then the fee is set by the husband as to what the aggressor has to pay, and it is approved by the court. And the principle involved is verse 23 and 24 that says, but if there is any further injury, then you shall appoint as a penalty life for life, eye for eye, tooth for tooth, hand for hand, foot for foot. So what is that? What do we call that? Lex talionis. It's the punishment fits the crime. So in other words, they didn't have get rich schemes, you know, like we do. If we get injured, we want to sue somebody for $1 million in punitive damages right away. You know, they didn't have that. You pay what you deserve to pay, and that's all. No more. So again, our justice system could learn something from the laws nation Israel had. They were fair. They weren't unbalanced. Now, there's injury. The payment has to be commensurate with the harm done. You don't get a free ticket for the rest of your life because you hit somebody. The fourth case, in fact, you know, we could translate that principle, the commensurate with the harm principle. We could say, it says eye for eye, tooth for tooth. We could say car bumper for car bumper or fender for fender. You know, you pay what you deserve to pay and no more. The fourth case we looked at a minute ago, and that's the slave who receives a permanent injury. He's released immediately. 26, if a man strikes the eye of his male or female slave and destroys it, he shall let him go free on account of his eye. And if he knocks out a tooth of his male or female slave, he shall let him go free on account of his tooth. So you have to be careful with your slaves. You can't just beat them indiscriminately. The Jewish law provided for the protection of their slaves. Now, why do you suppose? They served as slaves in Egypt, and they were absolutely mistreated. Now, the laws they have that God gives them protects the slaves. It gives the slaves, and it protects them where it really counts. They have to let the slave go. That's going to hurt their pocketbook. If you got the slave working for you, and it'd be like letting go a free employee, an employee who works voluntarily. And they had to let him go immediately. So it controls brutality to slaves by hurting the master in his pocketbook. The fifth example involves an ox goring a man. In verse 28, if an ox gores a man or a woman to death, the ox shall surely be stoned and its flesh shall not be eaten, but the owner of the ox shall go unpunished. There's two cases here in when good pets go bad type of thing. When your good pet goes bad, that's the next section of laws. And if an ox gores somebody, the ox has to die. Why is that? Because he's killed someone that was made in God's image. And that is so important to God that even animals have to die if they do that. Now, if you have a pit bull that kills somebody, that's your fault. You should know. You should train your pit bull. But the animals are put to death. Notice here, there is no qualification on the victim. The social status, the age, the gender, don't matter. If that ox kills a man, that ox has to die because that man was made in the image of God. So human beings are responsible for the damage caused by their animals. 28 says if that ox, he escaped from his pen, he killed somebody, you didn't have any knowledge of it, or you didn't know that ox was a man killer, or you didn't know your pit bull was a man killer, then the pit bull has to be killed, or the ox, or I shouldn't pick on pit bulls, they're really good dogs. Any dog. If your chihuahua gets out and chews somebody to death, They are mean. I know that. We used to have one. And we used to have, you know, back in the old days when I was a kid, they used to deliver our groceries, and the grocery delivery guy would not go in our house. He'd put it on the chair outside the back door and knock and run because of our Chihuahua. But they are mean dogs. I'm just using the pit bull as an example because that's the one you hear on TV all the time, and that's probably not a smart thing to do because they're just dogs like any other dogs. They just happen to be very strong dogs. And if you don't know that your dog is mean, you don't know your ox is mean and he gets out and kills somebody, then the ox has to die, but you won't be punished. Now, on the other hand, in verse 29, if, however, an ox was previously in the habit of goring, and its owner has been warned, yet he does not confine it, and it kills a man or a woman, the ox shall be stoned, and its owner also shall be put to death. So if you know your animals are dangerous, if you know your pit bull is mean, and you still let him go, if you know your Chihuahua is mean, and you let him go and he kills somebody, you are responsible for that. You should have taken care of that animal. So that's how their laws work. Human beings are responsible for the damage their pets cause. If they're aware, you know, if it's an accident, then they're not. But the pet has to die anyway. Either way, the animal has to die. Now we move on to the property rights laws in 21:33 through 22:15. And just by way of introduction, chapters 21 through 24, you'll recall from the beginning of the class, deal with social legislation, or what we would call civil law. So the basic laws are formulated for what we would call a civilized society. And these aren't religious laws, they're not moral laws as such, they're civil laws. It's kind of the good neighbor policy is what the laws advocate. They get down to the nitty-gritty of life, down where the rubber meets the road, and many of our country's laws, as I said before, are based on these laws. Many are not, and in fact, they get our laws in our country get further and further away from these with each legislative session we have, I think. The laws are pretty straightforward here. They don't need a lot of comment, so I'm not going to bore you by explaining each and every law. We're going to overview these. I will say one thing. I thank God that my salvation doesn't depend on keeping these laws. And Israel's salvation didn't depend on keeping these laws either. How do I know that? God already delivered Israel. They're out of Egypt. They crossed the Red Sea. They're at Mount Sinai. Now they get the law after they've been delivered. And it works the same way with Christians. You live the Christian life after you've been saved. So if someone comes up and says, well, in order to be saved, you have to commit your life to Christ, that's putting the cart before the horse, because you can't do that until you're saved. You know, you're telling somebody they have to live the Christian life before they're saved? No, that's not how it works. God deals with grace. He doesn't deal with works. So, property rights. First, we have laws against negligence in verse 33 through 36. And basically, these come down to this. If a person is culpable, you know what culpable means? It means he's guilty. He's to be blamed for it. It's his fault. Negligence. Culpable negligence, in other words, negligence that was his fault, then if that results in loss or damage to another person's property, it demands full restitution to the person who suffers the loss. Again, if you vandalize somebody's property, for example, well, that's not really negligence, is it? If you are negligent and somebody's property is damaged, if they're hurt, what's better? Send you to jail and let the guy fix his own property or make you fix it? The laws, again, are built around the victim, not the criminal. We send our criminals to jail. Pretty much, I've got a nephew that works in the Colorado prison systems, and he said these guys live better than he does. They have TVs in their cell. They just built a new facility down there a few years ago. They have TVs in their cells. They have their choice if they want to work or not. Well, the victim is completely forgotten after the case is over. That's not right. Or is it just me? I mean, that person shouldn't be in jail. He should be out working to recompense that victim. Just my take on it. But, you know, I was a contractor before I became a preacher. And I was contracting at a place once that had part of its production done in Taiwan. And there was a guy there, and he went to Taiwan probably once or twice a year. And he told me about something that happened when he was there one time, and it was a bank robbery. And these guys robbed a bank, and there was a gang of them, and someone was killed in the robbery. You know, he said it wasn't 2 weeks before they were stood up against the wall and shot. Because they're guilty, because that man died during their robbery. And there was no 15 years of appeals. He said 2 weeks, they were shot. And not only that, and this is the part that really got me, this is the kicker, the court sent those guilty people, they sent their family a bill for the bullets they used. I'm serious. Say, why should they waste their money on bullets, you know, to shoot criminals? That may seem rather harsh, but they were culpable. Someone was killed. And we used to have that law. I don't know if we do anymore. It's first degree murder if somebody's killed while a felony is being committed. I don't know if that's still a law or not, but that's what the law was there. And everybody knew they were guilty. They caught them red-handed on the spot. Anyway, if the animal turns bad, and again, here we have the good animals going bad, the owner is not considered culpable. And we're still over in verses 33. It says, if a man opens a pit or digs a pit and does not cover it over, and an ox or a donkey falls into it, the owner of the pit shall make restitution. That's negligence, and it's culpable. You dug a pit and you concealed it, and somebody else's ox fell in it. You have to buy him a new ox. You don't go to prison. You buy him a new ox. And he shall give money to its owner, and the dead animal shall become his. So he gets the ox. He gets to keep it if he wants to eat ox. I don't know if they're good or not, but he does get to keep the dead animal. If one man's ox hurts another so that it dies, then they shall sell the live ox and divide its price equally. And also they shall divide the dead ox. Or if it is known that the ox was previously in the habit of goring, yet its owner has not confined it, he shall surely pay ox for ox, and the dead animal shall become his. So if you know your animal's bad, and you still let him go kill another animal, then you have to make restitution to the person whose animal yours killed. So if an animal's known to be mad, then the owner should know enough to keep it locked up, whether it's an ox or a chihuahua. Now, chapter 22, 1 through 4, we have laws against stealing. And we'll find these laws a little bit different between the negligence laws, because the negligence laws were completely lex talionis. The punishment fit the crime. If you killed someone, you had to die. If an animal of yours hurt an animal of somebody else's, you had to recompense that guy for the animal. He had to pay him for the animal. So it's all very equally balanced. Now, the theft laws are a little bit different. And you may think at first glance that it's not completely fair. But let me explain a little. In cases of theft, the penalty is much greater than the cases of negligence. Why? One, because theft, the thief is directly guilty. This wasn't an accident. It couldn't have been, you know, I've never heard that as a defense. You know, it was an accident. I just kind of wandered into that 7-Eleven with a gun and pointed it at the clerk's face, and it was an accident. I didn't mean to do it. No, this is something that the guy's guilty of. So his punishment is more than the negligence punishment. And again, that just makes sense. Now it says, if a man steals an ox or a sheep and slaughters it or sells it, he shall pay 5 oxen for the ox and 4 sheep for the sheep. So he has to pay 5 times as much as he stole. And why is that? That's not fair, is it? He should just give back the ox? Well, there's something else involved here, and you can see that because of the difference between oxen and sheep. Oxen are 5 and sheep are 4. Why is that different? Well, we might think that's unfair, but it would be because we don't see oxen as a means of livelihood. Well, they did. If you stole somebody's oxen, then he couldn't plow his field. So there's more involved than just the theft of the oxen. He's lost productivity as well. So you have to pay him back 5 times. Now the sheep, they're not considered a working animal, so 4 times back for the sheep. That's why there's the difference. That word oxen can mean oxen or cattle, either one. And some of your Bibles may translate it cattle. Same thing. But there's a difference between the large animals, the work animals, and the small animals. Now, according to Expositor's Bible Commentary, and I didn't look through all the laws to find this, but they say that that extends that principle of paying back more than the value of what you stole. It even applies to tools. If you steal somebody's tools, his plowing, his cultivating equipment, then you have to pay him also for the income he lost because he didn't have his tools and couldn't do his job. That's fair. That's very fair. Now in the verse 2 and 3, we have homeowners' rights. Verse 2 says, if a thief is caught while breaking in and is struck so that he dies, there will be no blood guiltiness on his account. So a homeowner has every right to kill a thief if he breaks into his house and he's prepared to deal with him. There's a difference here. Look at verse 3. But if the sun has risen on him, there will be blood guiltiness on his account. He shall surely make restitution. If he owns nothing, he shall be sold for his theft. That's the criminal. But it says if the sun has risen on him, there will be blood guiltness on his account. What does that mean? Well, back then, if somebody broke into your house in the daytime, it was presumed that you could more easily determine his intentions than at night. You know, if somebody's in your house at night, then you have every right to assume he's there to kill you, and you can kill him in defense. Now, back then, if he came in during the day, you could see whether he had a sword in his hand or a knife, or if he was there to kill you. The point is, it was more obvious back then than it is now, and he couldn't shoot you from across the room. So you should have had time to gauge the situation. You're awake. There are witnesses around. See what this guy's doing. Now, In our culture, that's a little different, because if somebody comes in your house in the daytime, you can't really see if he's got a gun or not until he pulls it out and shoots you with it. So in our society, you have the right to use lethal force even in the daytime. Things have changed. And again, we're not under the Mosaic law. These laws were governed the civil life of nation Israel. And if the thief is caught later, he must make restitution. And again, as we read, even to the point of selling himself to pay for what he stole. Now we go back to property damage in 22:5-15. In verse 5 it says, if a man lets a field or vineyard be grazed bare and lets his animal loose so that it grazes in another man's field, he shall make restitution from the best of his own field and the best of his own vineyard. Again, property damage caused by your culpable negligence. You have to pay it back. It's just that simple. So the last case then deals with somebody who loans you or gives you an animal for safekeeping. What are the laws regarding that? Verse 10 says, if a man gives a neighbor a donkey, an ox, a sheep, or any animal to keep for him, and it dies or is hurt or is driven away while no one is looking, an oath before the Lord shall be made by the two of them that he has not laid hands on his neighbor's property, and its owner shall accept it, and he shall not make restitution. In other words, somebody loans you an animal, it disappears at night. That's not your fault, so you don't have to make restitution. But, verse 12, if it is actually stolen from him, so he's got the animal now and somebody comes up and steals it from him, then he has to make restitution because he's responsible to protect it if he can. So that's goods entrusted to another. In 22:16-31, we have laws on society. And again, I'm just going over these laws quickly, and I encourage you to read them in detail at your leisure, but it's just too boring to go through in front of the whole class. So I'll give you the overview and you do your homework. Laws on society. This is very interesting. I call this first section, How Low Can We Go? This is remarkable because these laws, as you know, are case laws. That means that they're dealing with cases that happen. These things happen and what to do if they happen. We have in verse 16 and 17, seduction. If a man seduces a virgin who is not engaged and lies with her, he must pay a dowry for her to be his wife. So if you seduce a girl, then you have to marry her and you got to pay a dowry. Now, if the father says you're not, I'm not going to let you marry this dirt bag, then verse 17 kicks in. It says, if the father absolutely refuses to give her to him, he shall pay money equal to the dowry for virgins. So he still has to pay. Sorcery and witchcraft in verse 18, you shall not allow a sorceress to live. Now remember, I want to point out again, these are the laws that God gave to nation Israel. This doesn't justify the Salem witch trials. What unbelievers do, what people outside of God's covenant nation does, is not his concern. His concern is what his people do. And we have to remember that. These laws were given to Israel. And the prophets as well were speaking to God's chosen people, his covenant nation. So you see the people today, and the doctrine is called Reconstructionism. And what it basically means is that they think it's our job as believers to make our society fall under God's law? Well, the Bible doesn't say that anywhere. The Bible speaks to believers. And it doesn't say you have to whip an unbeliever into submission. So keep that in mind. This is not a carte blanche invitation. So I think that girl's a witch. I'm going to go kill her. No, that's not the deal. Two things wrong there. One, that was written to God's chosen people. And two, in that time, God's chosen people was Israel, not the church. We're not under this law. But it does tell us God's attitude on witchcraft and sorcery. Now, we might learn something from that if we're smart. Bestiality in verse 19. You see why I call this how low can you go? Whoever lies with an animal shall surely be put to death. That was happening. Hey, it happens today. We all know that. But it's not our responsibility to make a law that would put unbelievers to death. They're unbelievers. They can't live the Christian life. Idolatry in among God's covenant people in verse 20. He who sacrifices to any god other than to the Lord alone shall be utterly destroyed. Now, they considered that throwing them out of the nation Israel. And that was the death penalty for these guys. Now, that is not saying that we should kill infidels. You see how that could be misconstrued? If you worship any god other than the true God, then, you know, we should kill you. That's not addressed to the world at large. It's addressed to God's covenant people. If God's covenant people worship false images, then we should, from that, we should know what God's attitude is on that. Of course, we're not under the law. We're under grace, fortunately. And Israel was too, as we'll find out, because they're going to promise in chapter 24, they're going to promise, I'll keep every law that God gives. And then in verse 32, they're going to be in total rebellion against God. And God is going to respond with grace. So God was gracious even to nation Israel who were under the law. We'll get to that next hour. Now the laws on oppression, verse 21 through 31. Now these laws treat forms of oppression against the poor, the widow, the orphan, and the alien. And I assume it's talking about legal aliens. Just people that are passing through. I don't like to get political, so I'll shut up. But that's what these laws deal with. And again, you shall not wrong a stranger or oppress him, for you were strangers in the land of Egypt. Now, Israel should have learned their lesson when they were under the Egyptian taskmasters, because they oppressed them horribly. Their whole strategy was to oppress Israel so badly that they would die out as a nation. But because they were afraid that Israel would ally with their enemies and overthrow Egypt. So they oppressed them to the point where they wanted to destroy them as a nation. What happened? Well, God stepped in. They grew like wildfire during that time. They grew from a bunch of clans, 70 or so clans, to a population of probably about 2 million during their oppression in Egypt. So the Egyptian plan totally backfired, but God is saying, look, Israel, you were under oppression. You know how that feels. Don't you dare oppress someone under you. And that's what these laws in 21 through 31 cover. Now, next hour, we'll finish up these judgments and we'll skim through chapter 4, which is Israel's acceptance of God's terms. They're going to ratify the covenant officially. If Father, thank you for your word and thank you for your law. We read your law and we pray that we can keep in mind the purpose of your law is to point out your perfect justice and to point out man's horrible sinfulness. And as we look through these laws, we can see that no one could ever be saved by keeping these laws because no one could ever keep them. And that was never their intended purpose. Father, in Christ's name we pray. Amen.